Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I am Paul Daner Jr. here with Joe Reedy. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm good, but don't we need a new opening or something?
Yeah, you know, I will say, we've gotten some compliments. I love the intensity of the Vol Beat open. It makes us be prepared to come in here and really get after it.
But I'm ready to run through a wall.
Yeah. But this week, of all weeks, the week of the media mutiny, when Joe Reedy became the Rosa Parks of our media room, and we overcame so many things. We fought. You brought out the first ever media boycott, I believe, possibly in history of the Bengals and certainly of the Cincinnati media. So let's roll in the new open.
Power to the people! Power to the people! Power to the people! Power to the people!
That is much more like it, because you're a revolutionary, really. Now, let's give some background for those that maybe it was a small blip on the radar last week. The second day of practice, there were some changes to the media where we were allowed to go, where the photographers were allowed to go. You said power to the people.
Yes, I did. So should this be like Radio Free Cincinnati or something like that? I mean, when we go to Athens next week, Radio Free Europe and all that. But
yes.
I mean, it was one of those access severely restricted, and it could have gone on throughout camp, and really the access that the photographers and videographers would have gotten, the angles would have been poor. You would have been sending lots of letters to your TV stations going, why the crappy images, which they had no control over. And let's face it, if you saw the triangle, it was the shape of a phone booth, I think, as far as getting a lot of people in there. Jeff Swinger wouldn't have gotten the shots of A.J. Green that he did.
Yeah, which were incredible from the day when A.J. got hurt. I mean, he had the exact moment of the hyperextension of that knee. And the one with him on the ground and Terrence Newman behind him in the rock ditch is a classic. I mean, you know, Swingman's been doing that for a long time now. And so that's the last thing you want to see is him to not be able to. It's hard enough out there as it is, being able to even roam the one sideline, because it is pretty tight. Now, could you imagine going out to the far triangle, which was apparently shoved back in the woods next to a shrub? I mean, it was tight. But you know what? We all stood together as a Cincinnati media. We fight and bicker amongst ourselves and try and one-up each other. But for this moment, when the man was trying to hold us down, we all came together and staged a little 45-minute boycott. And guess what? Changes occurred. And it was a lesson in civics, really, is what
yes.
It was.
But a lot of credit to Jack Brennan and PJ Combs of Bengals PR for... I think their hands were tied in the whole situation, and until somebody basically kind of had to usurp usurp those guys and go, no, this really isn't going to work. I think they were able to get our points across to them, and in the end, I think access is better. Viewing from the bleachers has been nice so far. Went up on the bridge Sunday for the Oklahoma drill, and, you know, so far so good.
Yeah, no, everything is great now. I mean, it was honestly, I think from after that day, it's more become just a comical joke between all of us now. It was quickly resolved, and everyone's moved forward, and we all can go about doing our business, which there has been plenty to talk about outside of media mutinies. Let's start here. Let's start with 5 days. Let's go with five players that have caught your eye, that have maybe not necessarily been surprises, but have been noticeable that maybe you didn't necessarily expect.
Number one, Dre Kirkpatrick, the gains that he has made, very impressive so far. I knew he'd have a deep learning curve to begin with, but looks like he's closing it a little bit. Athletic ability definitely shows. Technique stuff, I think some improvements have to be made. But he's going to challenge and do well. And if there's injuries to that secondary, I think he'd feel a little better knowing what he can do.
Yeah, I think you go down that line, and you talked about going up to the bridge, which – by the way, is that the best view that you've had of camp? Almost specifically for that drill, it was. But it's a cool view up there. You get the straight overhead to really be able to see a lot. Now, I'm sure frowned upon, for to really go up there for a lot of people to go up there. But for that particular day, it was a pretty cool view up there.
Yeah, two of the TV station shot from there. Members of the Bengals front office were up there to view the Oklahoma drill, so you could tell when. Jay Morrison and I got up there that we were able to get a good view, and we knew we were in the right place. Credit for Jay for also helping score the Oklahoma drill. We are both licensed for Oklahoma drills in New York and Nevada, still waiting for California. Paul, your licensing is en route in time for next year, but I think the panel, I think really only one split decision in our judging of Oklahoma battles.
Who was the – do you remember the split decision? There were – sometimes it's hard to see. Now, I will say this because, I mean, I looked – one of the videos I posted with our day at camp from that day was two back-to-back. One was J.K. Schaefer versus Orson Charles. And if you watch – Orson Charles, it appears to just pancake J.K. Schaefer. But the pancake really starts when J.K. reaches out and actually forces a fumble on the play. And as he was reaching, got shoved down on the ground. Well, it's hard to really see that, especially from how far away you can be. So a player where it looks like the offensive player has definitely won, well, if you're the defensive player and you forced a fumble, you could say that you were maybe the winner. And there's a lot of plays like that where it's kind of hard to tell. And Marvin talked about that. You know, the drill really, in actual football skill, doesn't really play in, but it's more just it sets the tone really for how physical you need to be more than anything. It's not really as much about winning and losing as it is about who's going to be the most physical and sort of have the will to take it to people.
But it's also a message thing too, Paul, because let's face it, James Harrison took on Jermaine Gresham in the first round of drills. Last one, Geno versus Gresham. Gresham asked for that. Jermaine didn't exactly say anything afterwards as his you talk about boycotts and stuff. There was our 40-minute boycott, and I think Jermaine is on day 360 of his boycott of most of the Cincinnati media at this moment.
Yeah.
I will say, Jermaine, great guy, easy to talk to when there's not a camera and recorder on. We're hoping that improves, especially as a two-time Pro Bowl player, but kind of wait and see. But, you know, those things send messages, and player number two out of our five, out of the Oklahoma drill, Orson Charles looked good. And, you know, it's one of those, after seeing that, I have some encouragement about Orson at that H-back spot, and then part of me remembers that there was a training camp in 2010 where Chase Kaufman dominated the Oklahoma drill, and you know, Chase didn't make it to the final roster, so Orson in the four preseason games, I think, still got a lot to show.
He's an interesting case, and we probably, you know, how much of an effect he can actually have in the season is yet to be known. But the versatility that he could bring you, if he can be effective in the run game from that fullback position, you could be looking at a situation where you line up in essentially a power goal line with Eifert and Gresham and Charles at the fullback position all in, and instantly morph to a threatening passing attack with three great pass-catching tight ends running around on you and, you know, AJ or something like that out on the outside. The versatility that could provide for you, assuming that he can bring the hammer on the run game, is pretty unmatched, and it could be a project that Marvin Lewis and his staff concocted that could really pay off pretty big.
Yeah, but I think the one thing that impressed me, too, was that Saturday, him holding his blocks in those 9-on-7 drills, mm-hmm. too. It wasn't the Oklahoma. It was just a one-off blip on the radar screen. I think he's improving. It's one of those where I think he still have to have a conventional fullback, even though 20% of the plays. But, you know, it's encouraging to see what took place during the weekend with Orson.
So you think that they would have to keep a Presley, obviously, or somebody like that, or even John Connor. I mean, there wouldn't be room for both of them.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I think it's Orson or, you know, Connor. I think Presley probably right now opens the season on a pup list, and you got 6 weeks. Where that might, you know, if Orson Charles wins a job over John Connor, you got 6 weeks to see what he can do at that H-back. And if worse comes to worse, when Presley comes off pup, you know what you can do in that case.
Yeah, exactly. It gives you a chance, almost a 6 week trial to check it out. Sort of like the trial period that you get with HBO, and then you just cancel it after your month of watching Hard Knocks. Like I believe probably 90% of our listeners to this podcast are probably going to do.
Exactly.
I want to keep going here. We keep talking about Tyler Eifert, but only because he keeps doing great things.
Oh.
he is a stud.
Yes.
I mean, he has proven to really – and, you know, this is from 5 practices in his first camp. So we're not exactly going to give him the all-pro stamp of approval just yet.
And I'm going to Canton on Friday. I don't think we're pouring the gold for the bust yet.
No bust. But it is apparent – why he is a first-round draft pick and why there seems to be so much buzz about him. I mean, today we see him on the goal line situation, flexes out and has a safety on him one-on-one in space. They throw a little lob up. I mean, he makes it look easy over Sean Williams. That is a danger. He's so good with those contested catches. Just imagine how many times that they're going to try and set that matchup up. And quite frankly, it's going to happen because you will have him, AJ, on one side, and then you're in a goal line, and you flex Eifert out and to make those types of plays. He has that great leaping ability and the great hands. He's just incredibly dangerous down there. And he's been great running routes as well. I mean, he consistently breaks himself open. He really has a great feel. I've heard some people have sort of brought up Mohamed Sanu in his feel for the game because that was one of Sanu's biggest strengths. Eifert seems to have that too. A big key for Eifert to succeed, though, will be how he does blocking. And I wrote about that earlier this week and spoke with tight ends coach Jonathan Hayes about it. Let's listen to him talk about that. Is that a big step for you guys with him to see where he's at with that?
No, because through OTAs and everything else, you know, you have a feel for what he's going to be able to do athletically and how technically, and that's where I want to get him so his technique is sound and he can put himself in good position to get on people and stick on them and get his hands on them and run with them.
Where's he at with that, you think?
I think he's with the rest of the group, really. I mean, everyone's hands are sloppy right now. Everyone's a little out of torque because once you put the pads on, now your hands get one spot. And, you know, I want to see him in a certain spot. It's only first day. So We got time.
I was talking with him about just some stuff and mentioned the Oklahoma drill happening tomorrow, and he was sort of like,
Oh, what is that a thing that they do here? Is that something that you look forward to? Is seeing a guy like that in something in a situation like that, or does that go for everybody?
It goes for everyone, but the one thing about Tyler, he's a very competitive kid.
Yeah.
So he's not going to go out there and faint. It's not going to be too big for him.
Yeah.
You know, now is he going to get out manned or something? Who knows? We'll see. We'll find out tomorrow. But yeah. I know it won't be lack of trying. It'll just. Yeah. You know, if his technique's not correct, those things.
Yeah. If he comes out and ends up being a really effective blocker, how much can that help his effectiveness as a receiver?
Oh,
because people
greatly.
Have to respect him.
Greatly, because now they're not just going to sit there and think he's just a pass catcher.
Yeah.
You know, he's an all around. And really, if his game, even though he caught a ton of balls in college, and that, but they used him in line and those things. And the way the NFL is played today is not like it was played when I played the position. And so, you know, if you can move your feet, get your hands on people, and run with them, you'll be in pretty good shape. And he can do those things because he's so athletic.
Right.
So it's just going to be a matter of getting him to understand his hat placement, where to put his hat, where we're trying to fit the ball, those type of things.
He doesn't need to be a guy that can come out and pancake people. He just needs to be a guy that's in proper technique and position. And then what he does on the other side with being able to catch the ball so well really makes him the complete player at that point, I guess.
Well, then you just let your abilities take over and let him go play. And that's what we expect from him.
Yeah.
That's why he's first-round draft pick, you know.
Yeah, and I think when you look at red zone too, Paul, what Sanu can do in red zone, what Jermaine can do in red zone too. And if you got Giovanni Bernard in there in goal line too, what he can do. I think just a ton of red zone weapons, and Eifert's got such a feel for the game that too might, you know, Gresham's hearing footsteps a little bit, but, you know, Jermaine's been, and I hate kind of coming back to Jermaine and everything because I'm not trying to harp on him and everything, but Jermaine's kind of been feeling that pressure since being the first tight end in that talented 2010 class and trying to be the expectations and all that and following the playoff game against Houston. I think Jermaine's just got to concentrate on here and now and not what happened in the past or trying to measure it in the past, because his circumstance was a lot different than Graham's in New England and Gronk's in the New England and New Orleans situations.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, Marvin mentioned him being more mature the other day, seeing how he's grown incredibly over the last year or two. Do you see that? I mean, it's because it's one of those things where it's got to be proven on the field, and I don't know that we saw that big jump that everybody's waiting for last year. And maybe the Eifert thing inspires it. But do you see what Marvin's talking about there, or at all?
I haven't seen it because he hasn't talked to us.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, and I want that's true. But I wonder how much if he's referring to his maturity in general and how that would really how that plays out onto the field.
He's had some good plays so far.
Yeah.
I think the down the middle and everything, the stretch to field, he's done well. And he's shown it. I mean, the Cleveland game last year, basically trucking a couple Browns defenders, which, let's face it, ain't hard. But still, the way he was able to truck them and go the distance and everything. But I think in time it will come. But player number four, and we always talk about rookies who don't play a lot and then in their second year kind of vault up. George Iloka got a lot of time here on as we filmed this on Monday evening from the palatial offices of the Bengals media room outside of the weight room here at One Paul Brown Stadium. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Operators on call now.
But unfortunately, sometimes it feels like we're here 7 days a week for 24 hours. I don't know how many hours we're going on right now, but that off day on Tuesday is going to feel fabulous.
Yes, it is. George Iloka, time with the first unit and played special teams last year, but I think really is coming on this year. I think people are kind of thinking Sean Williams 1, Taylor Mays 2, and Iloka 3 right now. I kind of have him 1 or 1A at the moment with what he's shown.
Yeah, those that will definitely be playing out, and you'll be wanting to look for that in your preseason games is watch who plays those snaps, who makes the most plays. Sean Williams, in that regard, has not disappointed at all. I mean, he had an interception on Monday that was a great play, reading the eyes of John Skelton and stepping in front of Brandon Tate, which what would have been a pick six. Had showed very well defensively in the Oklahoma drill. I mean, he's known for being a physical guy, not afraid to put his nose in there and get it done a little bit. And from all accounts, from what we hear from the coaches, has done very well in picking up the playbook and making some of those back end calls, which, as we know, last year was a big part of the issue with when Chris Crocker had to get called back up. And love Mike Zimmer talking about, hey, I don't care who's going back there. I will call Chris Crocker if we need to call Chris. I will call whoever we need to call. Somebody's going to get in there and get it done. He in his own Zim way, seems to think that the guys on the roster here can pull that off. You know, he certainly wasn't giving any stamps of approval, but – in his own way, saying, hey, I think somebody probably can do it.
But you know what? The interesting thing, too, Jermaine Gresham can learn from Chris Crocker, because last year at this time, Crocker was gone, but everybody was talking about him playing the most horrible game in Bengals postseason history, which I don't think he did. I think a lot of people contributed to that.
Yeah.
And people were going, why do you re-sign this guy? And then the rest of the season played pretty darn well.
Yeah.
And probably would have played well in that playoff game against Houston if he didn't get hurt. So I think maybe Jermaine can look at Crocker a little bit as far as, hey, these, you know, struggled in a playoff game, came back, played great,
yeah,
and move on from there.
I think another guy to look at, I think Marvin Jones, he had a really strong first few days. And I was talking to him the other day, and he was talking about how him and Andy really were working on the deep ball a lot during OTAs and during minicamp. And he was saying it felt like we were hitting 100% of them. We haven't seen that translate out here yet. He was close on a ball yesterday, dove and ended up face planting as he dove, and kind of got shaken up a little bit on the play, actually, and almost held on. He was very frustrated that he couldn't hold on to that ball, but you know, he seems to have a real feel of that he's getting that connection down with Andy. I mean, they had limited time together last year. They didn't play a ton of snaps together, and I think as they get more used to each other, I mean, I think there's a feeling that he could be that deep threat that can really help you stretch the field, especially if he goes and gets it the way he's shown that he's been able to go and get it in with some of his great catches in camp so far.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the offense and injuries last year, it was different guys at different times. I mean, Marvin was supposed to, that week 7 Sunday night game before Pittsburgh play a lot, got hurt and kind of waned a little bit. And kind of speaking about that, Marvin Jones, and kind of last season about that point, bad news out of Miami yesterday, Armon Bins lost for the year due to a knee injury, and from all indications out of Miami, Armon was having a good first week of training camp. So
he was really excited about that too. I know he felt like he was had a great fit in Miami, and they needed receivers. And really, he didn't play that poorly here. He got caught in a numbers game, and I think that there was hope that he would be able to come back and find a spot on the practice squad or whatever. But you know, it's not like he was terrible here. You just hate to see that. I mean, ACL and MCL, such a good guy, always great with
guy.
Us. I mean, I remember even back when he was at UC, was always great to me, and a super teammate. Everybody you ever talked to in the building was a huge Armon Bins fan. So you hate to see that, but that's the NFL. It happens, you know.
Yeah, and especially the way on the practice squad here in 2011, the way he kind of signed during the season and earned his snaps and stuff and all the practices. I mean, hopefully the surgery with Armon and everything goes well. But, you know, Marvin Jones got that injury week 7 and then was slowly being worked back in. And then Sanu gets hurt, and Marvin really got thrown into the deep end of the pool. But I think those last three games, including the playoffs, played well and kind of translating it to this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And something we talked about, if you check out our video up on sustain.com. We broke it down a little bit into Michael Johnson and talked about him. I was just as impressed the interview we did with him as anybody. Not that I didn't expect it. Not that I didn't expect him to be a gracious team guy. But I was really taken aback by his attitude, in that he was so excited for Carlos when he got his deal, and no bitterness at all about what happened, and playing under a 1 year tag, which some guys don't like because the chance of injury, and you know you're playing essentially, you're adding another contract year, but he is just a believer in this team, and he believes his, basically, without saying that, if you're talking about the money aspect, his point was, hey, if this team, this defense does well, he's going to get paid.
Yeah.
And he's going to get paid a lot, as he is right now, 11.175. Just think about that. But, you know, he is really on board with this team. And any worries about what happened with the contract negotiations for the long-term deal not working out and Carlos getting the money, any worries about that being an issue, you can squash those, because it's apparent through for what Michael's saying to us.
Yeah, and he's kind of been that way since February. Like, I'm not freaking about this. Nobody else should either. Whatever happens, happens. And, you know, it's not only a business for teams, it's a business for players. And yeah, that second contract, you can set up your family and future generations of your family for a long time. And, you know, hopefully everything works out. We'll see kind of how the season goes here.
Absolutely. Another interesting interview that we had this week. Of course, it's always interesting when we talk to James Harrison. You never quite know what's going to happen. And we learned a few things about James Harrison this week. So I want to go to your interview that you had with James Harrison, talking earlier this weekend, actually, in the locker room. Here's Joe and some other reporters with James Harrison.
Just, I mean, as far as the process, just there are a couple areas where you feel like you're behind it.
This is a demonstration of Flip for Mac.
Everybody's behind right now. I mean, it's the third day. It's our second day, which will be our actual first day of foot pads, or second day of actually wearing shoulder pads. So it has a different element to it. And we're still learning a lot of defense. We put in probably maybe half, or just as much defense as we had the last 3 days, as we had just in this one day. So we'll see.
This is a demonstration of Flip for Mac.
Because there are a couple young guys. Just what's it been like playing with them?
It's a learning process for me right now. They're helping me out a lot with things that I need to know on the field. So it's a switch of positions for me, so to speak, where I'm learning to, you know, from a younger guy. That's about it.
Two-way street, do they kind of come to you?
Taking care of your body, things to do as far as carrying yourself as a professional. They talk to me about that. But as far as learning the defense, that's something I got to talk to them about.
Just anything special about first full day in pads?
No different than the first day of shoulder pads. No live tackle, so I'm just wearing pants now.
As a guy known as a big hitter, do you look forward to the Oklahoma drill?
I do that drill every day when I was in Pittsburgh, so it's not a difference. We just didn't call it Oklahoma, we call it tight end.
This is a demonstration of Flip for Mac.
Every day you guys did that?
Yeah, it's a read drill. You line up against the tight end, you read if you go run, if you go cut off, reach, or drive block. And after that, you find the ball carrier. Fit up. It's not a – y'all adding something extra to it, you know, just by calling it Oklahoma. Oklahoma is just a straight-ahead drill. That's easy.
Good summer and everything?
It was all right. Sorry.
Just saw the thing on the Facebook. You had a new apartment building or new shopping?
Yeah, just finished putting up an apartment building down in Morgantown Beach View Place.
This is a demonstration of Flip for Mac.
A good thing that closes 15th of August, so we'll open up then.
Just what's it like with the Hard Knocks cameras around and everything?
Pain in the AASS.
So I think we have our new like favorite clip that we're going to have to continually bring back here on the podcast. The pain in the AASS from James, which we're pretty sure is just a long way of saying ass. He's just sort of really, although he did come back later and say, no, that's not exact. I meant a double S. But regardless, it's going to work for us. That clip's coming back.
Yeah, and, you know, it's so far so good. And you, one thing you notice with James, we didn't dilly-dally during that interview. We kept it going, kept it free-flowing. And, I mean, with James, you get your 3 to 4 minutes. Get what you want then, and then get out. He's done his obligations. He's done his time. I can totally respect that. So make sure it's a quality 3 to 4 minutes.
He set the precedent from the very beginning that these interviews will be efficient. There will be no pregnant pauses in between the questions. They will come quickly, or else he'll clap and say, "Let's get this going," or he's gonna just be it's gonna be over. Hey, we like that.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's go in there. Let's get it done and get out. We're all fine with that, even if it is a little scary sometimes.
Yeah. With James, you never quite know. With the reputation he has, it's still getting to know you. I don't feel like there's a Kent State to Kent State kinship there yet, and I don't think James would ever care for a Kent State kinship between player and reporter, and I don't blame him for that. But you know, learning from the young guys, I thought it was an interesting thing as far as learning the defense.
How do you think your Kent State experience compared with James Harrison's Kent State experience? Probably pretty much the same.
We were both undrafted guys. Not a lot. People thought much about us. I wasn't thought of a lot within the halls of Taylor Hall and the journalism school, and had to work my way and turn a lot of people around. I didn't win Journalist of the Year, unfortunately, and for the Inquirer a long time ago, got denied for an internship. But it's funny the way things work out in the end.
So really, you and James Harrison have a lot in common.
We both have huge, huge glacial-sized chips on our shoulder, no doubt.
But you mentioned this, though, learning from the young guys of the defense. I mean, talk about some of the things he said there about that. And was that surprising to you? I mean, you knew he had to learn from somebody, but, you know, you would think those guys are obviously learning a lot from him, but it goes both ways.
And I think James learned a little bit from me, too, because I'm like, you're actually the oldest guy that, you've been used to learning under veteran players. And it's like, I don't think you've had enough or the number of young guys that this defense has. And I think Aaron Maben, who we haven't talked a lot about where he fits in this linebacker thing, if at all, has a lot of experience. It's just not Ray Maluga anymore, and I think that takes the pressure off Ray a little bit and kind of see how it goes. But, you know, young guys learning stuff off James, and James learning stuff off young guys. It's people helping people. Helping people.
Helping people. One big happy family. We all sing Kumbaya and help each other until the first couple L's come, and then it gets a little scary amongst everyone as the chippiness would build.
Yes, to say the least.
But it's great. Now, training camp interviews are the best because everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's optimistic. Nothing's really
going
on.
Zim is smiling.
Oh, we've gotten at least a smile a day out of Zim, I think, which is some sort of new record at this point.
Yeah, I would say so.
But everybody's in a good mood. They want to talk to us. They don't look at us and hate us the second they see our faces, which by about week 3 is probably when it starts to get – the glares come through squinted eyes.
No, usually the second preseason game when I'm talking about a secondary struggling and Zim will go, you know, I've coached secondaries for 20 years and I think they're fine, but, you know –
but what do I know?
Yes.
Yes, that was a great moment. Wait, that was a moment where Zim pretty much just – he drove the bus over you, threw it in reverse, backed it back up again. He could do that.
I think right on the 20, I had spleen surgery, and it was like a MASH triage unit. It's like, okay, there's a part of me there, part of me there. Yeah, and there were a few times like that last year, but
Zim always keeps it interesting. That's what you always know. You never know quite what you're gonna get. You're gonna either really enjoy it or get run over and leave many body parts laying on the ground.
That's true, to say the least.
So next week we'll be coming to you live from more than likely unspeakably hot Atlanta, where the Bengals will be down there for a few days. What are some of the things that you're looking at as the next week after Tuesday's off day unfolds and the team heads to Atlanta leading into the first preseason game?
More consistency, more, you know, cohesiveness. I think the first couple days offense was crisp. The last couple days, not as much. I just think seeing young guys continue to progress in everything, and, you know, one of these days we get Marvin's favorite day of the year, the because I have to do it, I don't want to do it, but because the league says I have to do it, the release of the depth chart.
Oh, the release of the depth chart is the worst. Because no matter what's on there, Marvin's going to say, it means nothing. And it's true. To him, it really doesn't mean anything.
During the regular season, it means nothing.
No, not at all. Because you can just ask Carlos Dunlap about not being listed as a starter on the depth chart all season. That's always a fun conversation.
Even though first playing with the first team this time, so maybe maybe it has rubbed off. But, you know, I think quarterback, who's listed number two, who's listed number three, is going to be something to watch. Josh Johnson on Monday played. We knew he was athletic in a read option and knew the West Coast, but out of all the quarterbacks, I think he had the best day throwing, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, he looked very good, and I talked with Jay Gruden afterwards about the read option, and you know, you can read that in Tuesday's Inquirer, and he basically said you have to utilize it. It has been too good for too many teams to not look into how you can use it on your own team. He doesn't view it as a wildcat-like fad. He thinks it really is here to stay, and he wants to be a part of it in some way. And the only way for that to really happen with his team is with Josh Johnson, because he's a speedy guy. He's had success running the ball in the past. He could be a guy where one or two plays a game, you bring him in and you show that look to keep other teams on their toes, having to think about it, and he could be an effective thing. Who knows? Maybe you don't, but you have that option. It certainly sounds like they're going to have someone like that stuff installed, so if they do want to go to it, they can. We don't, whether they do or not, we'll see.
Yeah, it's just something down the line. I mean, those first two preseason games for him and Skelton are going to be vital to see what they can do.
Well, let's hope that we don't have to have any media mutinies regarding our access when we go to Atlanta. But if we do, we know how to handle it. We know we have now officially staged a sit-in. Maybe next time we'll try a different tactic. I think picketing, hey, hey, ho, ho, this crappy access has got to go.
I'm just Molotov cocktails. I just bring the tank right in. I mean, no, I won't go there.
Well, hey, but the thing is, you know, you're almost brazen now after your success. You're coming in with all the swagger to Atlanta, ready to. Don't worry, I will pick it wherever I need to pick it. I'll come in with more aggression. I will use this force. Are they going to be? They're going to be checking your house for WMDs if this continues. Well, we're happy all you guys came and listened to Scribe Session. We are here every Tuesday. We will be here every Tuesday throughout the season, bringing you everything from inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium, talking about whatever is going on. And right now there's plenty. So we've had big crowds coming down to the stadium.
Wait a minute, there's an NFL Films camera. Can we get them to film Scribe Session?
Maybe they could. Maybe we will be on the first episode of Hard Knocks on August 6th, breaking out our Scribe Session issue. But, hey, make sure you keep coming back every Tuesday. We'll be right here on the podcast, and hopefully it will not be as militant as it was this week. But, hey, the people have risen up, and we should have overcome. Stand up.
And the revolution will be told.
Stand up for your right.
Have a great one. We'll see you in the next Scribe Session.
Take care.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an art that deserves gold. After story had never been told, so now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Jab, jab.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up.
So we can't give up the fight.
Stand up for your rights.
Sick and tired of your ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in the Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you gonna
we gonna
do?
Stand up for a
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better get up.
Stand up
in the
don't
morning.
Give it up.
Stand up for your right.
Stand up,
stand up. Don't give up the fight.